Stocks break out to new highs, but there are signs that inflation is bottoming and bonds have finally woken up to higher for longer with rates. I'm Graham Summers, and this is Bulls, Bears, and BS. Welcome back to Bulls, Bears, and BS. I'm Graham Summers, and today is Monday, July 17th, 2023. Well, the stock market has broken out of a massive multi-month consolidation phase. What this means is that if you wind back the clocks the last 6 to 8 months, much of that time, the stock market has been trading in a large range. For the S&P 500, that range is between 3,800 and 4,200 or 4,300 to the upside. Well, we finally broke out of that range, and stocks have since just erupted higher. They've gone from approximately 4,250 up to 4,500 on the S&P 500 in the span of about 4 to 5 weeks. So what's going on here, and why is this a big deal? Well, first and foremost, the reason this is a big deal is that anytime you have the stock market break out of a prolonged consolidation period, the breakout is usually significant and tends to last, meaning this is not some sort of blip. What this does is gives us additional evidence that the market put in some kind of significant bottom in October of last year, and that we're in some sort of major bull run or possibly a new bull market. Now, this is somewhat surprising due to the fact that the bull market that we were in prior to this ended because rates were at 0.25% and the Fed was going to start raising them aggressively. And now rates are at 5.25%, and somehow we're in another bull market or some sort of major bull run. Looking at this on the surface, you could say, well, this makes absolutely no sense. You're telling me that the Federal Reserve can raise rates by 5% in 14 months while also draining about $500 billion in liquidity from the system, and somehow stocks will only lose about 6% during that entire time period? And yes, that's actually correct today. The S&P 500, as I say this, is about 6% off its all-time highs, which is truly extraordinary because we've just had one of the most aggressive Fed tightenings of monetary policy in history. So if you dust off your Economics 101 book, you'll probably say this makes absolutely no sense. Stocks are priced based on bond yields. Bond yields have skyrocketed due to Fed policy and inflation. So how is it that we have a stock market that's essentially only down about 5 or 6% from its all-time highs, despite the fact the Fed's done all of this? Well, there's a couple things to consider here. First and foremost, the Fed is tightening monetary policy into a very strange situation. The COVID-19 lockdowns really screwed up our financial system and our economy in ways that are going to take years and years to digest. It's never, ever been done before, shutting down an economy intentionally and then funneling $8 trillion into it in the span of 20 months, but that's exactly what happened. And so consequently, much of the data and much of the things happening right now have been badly skewed because we had this massive outlier event, both in terms of economic contraction and in terms of money printing and stimulus. The net effect of this is that there's still far too much liquidity in the financial system as far as the Fed should be concerned. Case in point, I believe nearly $2 trillion continues to be parked at the Fed every night as part of its reverse repo purchase agreements. These are essentially agreements through which banks and other financial institutions park extra cash they have at the Fed overnight, and they're paid 5% per annum on this cash. Now, the fact that there's even this much money flowing around, again, we're talking about nearly $2 trillion, tells you there's far too much liquidity in the financial system. Banks wouldn't be having all this excess funds to sit with the Fed if there wasn't. Secondarily, we can apply this somewhat to the average consumer in this country. Inflation has been a major problem, and it's definitively hurting anybody who makes less than, say, $75,000 or $80,000 a year. But taken as a whole, the American households has quite a bit of excess savings due to all the stimulus and money being thrown at the economy during COVID. The last data I saw showed that the American consumer on a net basis has something like $500 billion in excess savings lying around. Now, this money is being used to spend things, and it because the consumer accounts for anywhere between 68 and 75% of GDP, this is propping the economy up nicely, and money's also flowing into stocks. Finally, the third reason why stocks have been doing so well is that we are in a high inflationary period. And when you're in high inflation, you have three main choices. You have cash, bonds, or stocks. And stocks is ultimately the best inflation hedge of those three. Yes, obviously, gold and commodities might be better inflation hedges than stocks, but those are very small markets and they tend to be a bit more sophisticated. You don't typically hear people talking about, oh, I bought gold. They usually talk about they bought Tesla or they bought Apple stock or something like that. So essentially, we have this big macro framework in which all the money that was printed and pumped into the financial system and the economy during COVID, a lot of it's still sloshing around. All of the stimulus money that was pumped into the American consumer, along with the various credit facilities and paycheck forgiveness loans and the like, much of that's still in the American consumer's pocket and is being used to prop up the economy. And ultimately, stocks are a better inflation hedge than bonds or cash, so investors are flocking to stocks. And the end result of this is that you have a stock market that's only slightly off its all-time highs, despite the fact the Fed has just done one of its most aggressive tightenings of monetary policy in history. Having said that, as ridiculous as it all seems, we need to respect the market, and the market is telling us that it's in some significant bull run, if not a new bull market. A few items of note. The 200-day moving average for the S&P 500 is now turning upwards. Now, what this is essentially an imaginary line that compiles or summates the last 200 days closing prices for the market and then takes the average of them. And it's kind of a good indicator for intermediate-term momentum. There's simple moving averages, which people like to use to gauge market sentiment. Some of the more common ones are the 20-day moving average, the 50-day moving average, and the 200-day moving average. The 200-day moving average is perhaps the most common one used for intermediate-term trends. It takes a lot of price action for this moving average to turn, and the fact that it started to turn upwards after first turning downwards in May of 2022 tells us that the intermediate-term momentum for the stock market is now up. This is a very significant development, and it tells us that there's some degree to which this bull run or new bull market in stocks is going to last quite a while. We're not going to suddenly see things crash and everything go to heck in the matter of just a few weeks. So what would it take for this bull run or new bull market to go off the rails? Well, we would need to see the American consumer roll over in a big way, and there's no signs that that is happening right this second. Obviously, inflation is a systematic problem, and if it remains high for a long time, eventually consumers will have to tap out because they will have burned through all their excess savings. But as I record this for you Monday morning, there is no signal that that is happening right this second. Obviously, it could occur in the next few months, but again, not happening right now. Which brings us back to the Federal Reserve. The latest inflation data that we have is the Consumer Price Index, or CPI, for June. That came out showing inflation as year over year of 3% and just 0.2% month over month. This is actually the lowest CPI has been since inflation first entered the financial system in late 2020, early 2021. As far as the Fed's concerned as well, the core inflation, which is the measure it focuses on the most because it strips out both energy and food, which tend to be more volatile, came in at just 4.8%. Again, this was much lower than it has been for the last year. But we need to remember, this isn't really that low. The Fed's goal is to get inflation down to 2% total. So the fact that core inflation is remaining this sticky is very telling. In fact, core inflation has been hovering at 5% or just below 5% for most of this year. And the Fed is actually quite frustrated with this because while inflation appears to be coming down, core inflation is remaining quite sticky, and indeed there's signals that this isn't going to be ending anytime soon. Indeed, if you look at the detailed inflationary data that's in the CPI, you will see that the only numbers that are actually negative, meaning that on a year-over-year basis they're down, is energy. And there's a couple reasons for this. For one thing, the Biden administration has dumped 292 million barrels of oil from the Strategic Petroleum Reserve. This is a very, very dramatic force in the oil market because it's oil that's just being dumped onto the market over and over and over again, despite the fact that demand may not be great enough to meet this supply. It's very clearly a political move. It's something that the Biden administration started almost the month that it came into office. And they've drained 292 million barrels of oil. Again, this is more than 40% of the total SPR, and it accounts for a big reason why energy prices have come down so much, which, as I mentioned a moment ago, are in fact the only parts of the CPI that are down. The other reason why energy inflation appears to be down is because on a year-over-year basis, oil prices are really acting favorably for current inflation data. What I mean by that is when you think about inflation, what they're really talking about is the year-over-year price change in a basket of goods and services. So, depending on what a given item is priced at a year ago, you might actually have inflation data that looks highly beneficial, even though it's really not lower than it was in the long term. A good example of this is that oil prices skyrocketed during the first half of 2022 when Russia invaded Ukraine. As a result of this, oil prices went up to $130 a barrel. And so the first half of 2023 has been compared to that first half of 2022 as far as energy inflation. And because oil's been in a downtrend, because the effects of the war in Ukraine have not been as negative for oil prices as one would expect, and also because the Biden administration has been dumping so much oil on the market, you're getting very favorable year-over-year comparisons for oil prices, which makes it appear that energy inflation has actually dissipated or dropped quite a lot. And as I mentioned earlier, energy inflation is actually the only part of the inflationary data where prices are coming down. So if you add all of this up, it suggests it's quite possible that inflation right now is actually bottoming for two primary reasons. One, the only data that's really collapsing is energy, and that's for reasons I've just outlined. And two, the factors that resulted in energy inflation coming down are now ending. The Biden administration has admitted that it's going to need to start restockpiling the SPR, so it's going to start being a buyer of oil as opposed to a seller of oil. And similarly, as we enter the second half of 2023, we're going to be comparing energy prices to where they were in the second half of 2022. In the second half of 2022, energy prices were not nearly as high as they were in the first half of 2022, so the comparisons aren't going to be as positive, or excuse me, the comparisons aren't going to be as negative as far as inflation's concerned in energy. Think of it this way. If oil was at $130 a barrel in the first half of 2022, and then it fell to $70 a barrel in the first half of 2023, you've got fantastic net year-over-year changes in oil, at least as far as inflation is concerned. However, that's now ending. Oil spent most of the second half of 2022 below $100 a barrel, with an average price of about $85 a barrel. We're entering the second half of 2023 with oil at $77 a barrel. So we only need oil prices to go up a little bit higher for us to no longer have a negative year-over-year move in oil prices as far as energy inflation is concerned, which means that the consumer price index would be losing its single biggest negative number, which would suggest that CPI could actually start turning up from here. So again, it's quite possible that inflation is actually bottoming here and we're going to start seeing CPI turning back upwards. Mind you, that's headline CPI, not core CPI, which actually excludes energy and food and hasn't really been trending down that significantly. In terms of rate hikes, the big debate now is whether the Fed's going to hike rates one or two more times this year. That's really not that interesting, and the bond market has already discounted all of that. The bigger question is, how soon does the Fed start cutting rates? And a lot of that can be told to us by what treasuries are anticipating. If you look at the yield on the two-year treasury, So this is the yield on a treasury that's due 2 years from now. That yield has been jumping quite aggressively. It had a pretty significant decline last week. But if you wind back the clocks, in April, March and April of 2023, the two-year treasury was yielding about 3.75%. It's now yielding 4.7%, which is only slightly down from 5% where it was at the beginning of July. What this is telling us, because remember, rates are around 5.25% right now, is that the bond market was forecasting that the Fed would be cutting rates quite a lot within the next 2 years back in March, April, and May of this year. So that would mean March, April, and May of 2025. By then, the Fed would have cut rates at least 1%. However, the bond, that same treasury bond, has seen its yield rise so much lately that it's now telling us that we'll be lucky if the Fed's cut rates by even one time by July of 2025. That's quite a shift in narrative, and it tells us that the bond market is finally waking up to the fact that the Fed is going to have to keep rates higher for longer. What does that mean? It means that whenever the Fed finally does stop raising rates and leaves them, it's going to have to leave them at those levels for a long time. Think months, if not years. And that's going to have a dramatic effect on all the financial system. Remember, every risk asset is ultimately priced based on what treasury yields are doing. So if yields have been operating under the delusion that the Fed will somehow be cutting rates aggressively in the next 12 to 18 months, and the treasury market is now waking up to the fact that none of that's going to happen, and in fact, we'll be lucky if the Fed's cut rates even once or twice in the next 12 months, that's going to have a profound implication for asset price valuations. Because you could think of it this way, perhaps the treasury market, by operating under a delusion concerning future Fed rate cuts, has been allowing risk assets to be priced at levels that they normally wouldn't be priced with these current levels of inflation. But if treasury yields are now adjusting to this new higher for longer narrative that's going to become the norm for the financial system, that would ultimately suggest that risk assets would need to be valued lower, because the idea that yields are high just for a brief transitory period would be getting nullified. So these are all the things that I'm looking at today. The stock market, regardless of what one thinks, is demonstrating that there's considerable strength behind this rally. We're seeing this with various intermediate term momentum gauges turning upwards. Granted, stocks are somewhat overextended and overbought right now, but the intermediate term trend, which we're talking in terms of weeks, if not months, is now upwards. The Fed seems to be thinking that it's close to finished hiking rates. It might have one or two rate hikes left, but the bigger story there is that the bond market and the Fed are now starting to signal that rates are going to have to stay at very elevated levels for a considerable amount of time in order for inflation to disappear. Stocks are benefiting from inflation because they are a better inflation hedge than dollars or bonds. And finally, CPI might actually, in fact, be bottoming here, primarily because the number one driver of lower CPI has been lower energy prices. And the Biden administration is not going to be able to continue dumping oil on the market by draining the SPR for much longer. And the year-over-year comparables for oil prices won't be as beneficial to CPI going forward. That's all I've got for you this week. Stay safe out there, and I'm Graham Summers. This is Bulls, Bears, and BS.